Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you. And welcome to Hope and Healing, our journey to wholeness. This is your host, J.R. Thicklin, and I'm so very glad that you've joined us here tonight on the Soul of America Radio Network. That's right, each and every Monday night from coast to coast, you can find us right here on this network. That's right, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, 8 o'clock Central, 7 o'clock in the Mountain Time Zone, 6 o'clock in the Pacific, and wherever you may be on the globe, you find us here for this very important, informative broadcast of Hope and Healing, our journey to wholeness. For those of you that are joining us for the very first time, maybe perhaps you're listening at www.soulofamericaradio.com, or if you chose to call in to listen, you're calling in at area code 323-784-9638. That is how you reach us here tonight. And for those of you that are going to call in and want to be a guest or have a question or comment, as you call in, just simply hit the number 1 on your keypad. That lets our producer know that you want to get on the airway. I'm so glad that you're here. For those of you that are joining us for the very first time, this show is designed with you in mind. It is a show that that platform is now addressing the issues of domestic violence, sexual violence, abandonment, loss, rejection, anything that have caused you grief or harm, that there needs to be a place of healing. And so we believe that it takes hope in order to heal, and it's a journey to becoming whole once again. And once again, I'm your host, J.R. Thicklin, and I'm always glad to be with you. And I want to say right from the start, I want to say happy Memorial Day to each and every one. And when we say happy Memorial Day, we're simply acknowledging the loss, the sacrifice, the lives that was given in order for us to enjoy the freedoms that we have today. I often say this: freedom is never free. It costs something. It costs a price. And for many that gave their lives, we want to acknowledge them tonight. We're just a little late start, only because of technical difficulties on our satellite end, on this end here. But we're here, and we promise you that we will not cheat you out of a show tonight. We believe that we have a great lineup tonight, and we're looking forward to some great callers and you that are listening tonight. Perhaps tonight is something that will prick your interest inside of some things. We continuously deal with the issue of domestic violence here on this particular show, and sexual violence, abandonment, rejection, isolation, all those things that have a way of causing harm and injury. A tonight's show, we've entitled it, "When Loving You is Hurting Me." Yeah, some of us have been there before, when loving you is hating me. And it centers around the fact of so oftentimes that when victims find themselves in abusive relationship, many times it's not just a classical what people think abuse is and those type things. In many cases, the victim is in that relationship because they felt the need to protect the abuser. Perhaps the abuser was someone who had a reputation, who had a title, who had a high-profile position, someone who everybody thought was a great person on the outside and everything, but only the victim knows what they have endured. And so in many ways, that victim oftentimes, they are in that abusive relationship not because of the fact that they want to be, but because of the fact they are trying to protect that individual, although that individual is hurting them. So when loving you is hurting me becomes a real big situation, because it also means the fact that I'm trying to protect not only the reputation of the abuser, but oftentimes I'm trying to protect everything that I've built. And so it's a complex situation tonight. And that is our guiding topic on the night, not meaning that we cannot talk about other things, but that is our guiding topic on the night, and we want to make sure that each and every one of you are part of it. So once again, listen, text a friend, call a neighbor, tell them to join us tonight right here on the Soul of America Radio Network, area code 323-784-9638. That is how you reach us here on this great network. And so I want you to just know that tonight, that even as you've joined us, we're going to have a great time. And I want to bring our guest on tonight. And I guess I'm going to allow her to introduce herself. I will say this: she is a survivor. She is a thriver. She is one that has continuously began to do this work inside of addressing domestic violence, as she looks to begin to also being there as a source of counseling and resources for those that are abused and those that are looking to find strength. And she will speak tonight to this topic and whatever topic tonight that she likes to. And I want to officially bring her on. Welcome our guest tonight. Those of you that are listening tonight, I want to welcome our guest tonight. And I'm going to bring her on right now. And I want you all tonight just to give her your undivided attention. Call in if you have questions or whatever. And so with our audience tonight, let's welcome our guest, Letheria. She's going to give you an official introduction, but we want to welcome her in tonight. You're on the air tonight. Good evening.
Good evening, Pastor Thicklin. It is a privilege. I just want to say it is a privilege to just be on this radio talk show tonight. speaking on such a sensitive topic when loving you was hurting me. And thank you for the grandiose introduction also. Yes, I am a domestic violence. I call myself a victorious, thriving survivor.
Yes.
Okay, and I say this because I give God the glory for helping me successfully escape from a past abusive relationship. Yes, I am a domestic violence advocate and also a wife of a minister, and we share a great passion for hurting families, women, and children in the community. So it's such a pleasure to be doing this tonight. Back to the topic, when loving you was hurting me, I feel as though many victims have experienced this feeling and this position. I myself have also walked in this path, okay? And so that's why it's very dear to my heart, this particular topic. All right. Right now I'm going to share my personal story, okay?
Please do.
Why this is very essential to me. Hi. Years ago, my ex-abuser, he was and still is a prominent, wealthy business owner in his community, okay, with a good reputation, I should say great reputation, and his enterprise is a dynasty. His father and other men before him operate the same type of business. And this afforded him a very financially comfortable lifestyle. However, little that I know, I knew at that time that loving this man was going to hurt me in a mighty way. For example, in the very beginning of the relationship / marriage, he started to gain and maintain control by using intimidation or fear, by smashing items or using looks or using male privilege. For example, acting like the master of the castle and so on. But however, the ultimate behavior that made me afraid was this act of attempted murder of or nearly choking me to death, okay, in our home. And I remember I was being lifted off the ground with his hands around my neck, and I felt myself grasping and struggling to breathe, actually grasping for air. And this was the first time, even though I called the police on him, but I didn't press charges. And why? Well, the reason why I didn't is because I wanted to protect his reputation and image as a successful businessman in the community. And I knew if he went to jail, his image, okay, may have been affected, you know, negatively, okay? For instance, the business itself, the finances, and our lifestyle would have diminished. Okay, so I want to start off with that. Okay? And I want to go into reasons. Go ahead.
No, go right ahead. I'm really prompting you to go right ahead. I think this is so important for our audience to hear tonight.
Okay. All right. And I want to go into some other reasons why victims may protect their abusers' reputation and image. You know what? Frankly, the victim may love the abuser, okay, and don't want to see him harmed or look like a monster, so to speak, in the community. There's a curing factor there, all right? Like I said before, economic reasons, right? If the abuser acquires a bad reputation or image, it can affect their finances, okay, and lifestyle in a negative way. For instance, in my case, I just didn't want him to be seen as a wife beater, all right? Because I knew customers or clients, they saw it as a negative thing, they would have sought business elsewhere, all right? That would hurt.
Yeah.
And another reason is the victim may feel threatened, okay, threatened or fearful, or realize that, like, if she continues or contributes to any way of her abuser's image being tarnished, she could actually die. All right,
absolutely.
Like, for example, yes, in my case, my ex told me, he says if I had, like, taken his many toys away, stuff, so to speak, many rich, wealthy toys, what he likes, you know, including the home and including other assets, or brought his reputation down in any way, he would wait until I take a bath, all right, position myself in the bathtub, and he would have wrapped his hands around my neck, and he would have choked me to death, and I believe him. Because it was the look in his eyes, and a victim at that time, well, she knows. Like I said, she's an expert at survival, and she knows. So at that point, her best bet, you know, is as a technique or a way to protect herself and him, she goes along with it. Another reason, overall, like their overall successful family image, like I said, would be tarnished. She may not want the public to view not just him, but their whole entire family in a negative standing.
Let me ask you this, because I think it's important inside of what you're saying, that, and I think many people don't understand that is oftentimes a struggle with a victim. It is the fact that though this person is abusing me, I don't want to really tarnish their name or tarnish the family name. What I really want is the abuse to stop. But it's very hard for you to come forth because of the fact of the fear of not being believed by others that this individual is capable of doing such. And so, you know, inside of that, you know, kind of explain those dynamics, because there are many people who don't understand how complex it is in many cases to get out of an abusive relationship. In other cases, to really turn to someone, you know, someone that you can trust. Sometimes the shame of and the fear of not being believed is also a big part, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yes, definitely the shame. There is shame in that. She may, that's the thing about it, the victim is a female and male, it could be either or, but in my case, she may know deep down inside that he is not treating her, let's say, quote, the best, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or make excuses for it, let's put it that way. Make excuses, all right, for it. And she may be looking for that kind and compassionate, generous person to re-show himself. See,
mm-hmm.
A lot of times, many times people may think, okay, well, all right, let's say, okay, for instance, something may happen where she can't hide it. Okay, everybody may see the, let's say, physical incident that happened. So in this case, she can't hide it. He may see her, or somebody may see her being punched or something in public. She's trapped. She feels trapped. She will, most times, she will stand up to him, and she will stand up and support him. Again, because, like I say, she wanted to portray an image that she's, you know, supporting her man, okay? And, for instance, like I said, looking for that, let's say, perfect man, so to speak, to come back out. And it's very difficult, I mean, very difficult to leave, or even build up the strength, you know, to separate or depart from him at that time. And family and friends and individuals, they might not, you know, they can't understand that. They may be looking at her as if, okay, like I've heard this before, like what is wrong with her? They might judge her and, you know, criticize her. And that there in itself would make her feel even more shameful, you know, to hide, sort of like, you know, to hide up under him, you know, so to speak, in a way. So.
And so all those factors play a major part inside of the decision that she makes, because sometimes, here's the thing, it's not the fact that the victim might not love him, but loving him is hurting her. She's suffering in silence. She's hiding in shame. She's experiencing the sense of even rejection. She's experiencing the sense of fear. And because of the fact, you know, when she look at how others may view him, she feels that mm-hmm. she's going to be less believed by others. And so I wanted you to, if you could, talk a little bit about that, how much that plays into that role of that victim either remaining silent or really suffering over a period of time. Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. Less believed by others. Usually, okay, the abuser has actually systematically from the beginning have focused his efforts, okay, on being looked in a very good, I say very positive way in the community, okay? In other words, he may be, okay, for instance, he's going to be kind to her family, generous to her family. Like in my case, my ex-abuser brought my mom a convertible, right? A car, shifted all the way.
Okay.
Which means, so when I, you know, went to her and I said, look, he's abusing me, and I don't know what to do. I can't take it no more. And, you know, immediately her response was, well, what did you do to provoke
Absolutely.
Him? Or to upset him.
Interesting.
Why? Because he bought her things. He bought her even a new set, washing machine, convertibles. He sent her whatever she needed. Okay? So in her viewpoint, right, and her image of him was like, oh, he's grandiose. He's the nice man walking the face of the earth. Okay? And he also was very nice to my friends, especially my best friend. Okay, they get very close to the, like, her inner circle. They get everybody to view him as this, you know, nice, kind, generous. Oh, it's like a knight in shining armor. Like, my best friend, he used to help pay her bills. Okay? She'd come to me, I'm going to buy and stuff and all. And he's like, you know, no problem. Whatever she needs. Whatever she needs. Pay her bills, help her, you know. And even my brother, I had a brother. He was the best, well, to my brother, he was the best male figure or role model he ever had. Why? Because he allowed him to work in his business, right, you know, after he came out of college, okay. So he taught him many things. He's like a father to him. So all these people, I felt isolated. No family support, no friends, no resources, like, you know, like that. So his image was everything. You know, he systematically.
And let me say this. I want to interject. I really want to interject this, and for those of you that are listening tonight, you're listening to Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness. This is your host, J.R. Thicklin. We have here tonight our guest, Letheria, it's on, and she is a survivor, she is a thriver, and she is here tonight, and she's sharing part of her story. Our subject tonight is very simple, is when loving you is hurting me, and it is really talking about oftentimes the abuser oftentimes being able to exert power control simply by reputation, simply by, you know, having and owning certain things. And Letheria, you said something that I want to make sure that our callers are listening to. Here's a case, and I say this for so many people who say, well, how can this person be so bad, or it's got to be something wrong with the victim because he's a nice guy, you know, he gives, he's generous, he does things. Community and all those things there, and yet it's still, and all those things are true. But the interesting point behind that is that this individual used those very traits in order to control people, in order to garner sympathy, empathy, and support. That person does those things in order to absolutely pull people over to their side. Because after all, who's going to believe that this person is abusive to you, or threatening you, or doing the things he was doing to you in the bathtub, or, you know, of choking or strangling you? When here's a guy who's giving money, who's buying mom a convertible, who's paying bills for friends, who were doing all those things there. And so to a certain degree, that amount of power absolutely make a victim think twice about going forth, because she said, who's going to believe me when everyone sees the outward show of what this individual is doing? So I'd like for you to just continue from that point, because I think it's very interesting. And by the way, for those of you that are listening today, you can call in with any question or comment. Area code 323-784-9638. If you've called in already, you simply hit the number 1 on your keypad. That lets our producer know that you want to have a question, a comment, and we'll get you on the air. You don't have to give your name if you don't like, but we definitely welcome you tonight. Continue. Mm-hmm.
Okay, absolutely. She's also less believable because of the image that and the relationship he has also built with their children. That is very interesting. The children themselves.
Wow.
He will, like, for instance, spoil them. A lot of times he would spoil them, get them, you know, whatever they asked for, what iPhone. In my case, it was iPhone. Give them all iPhones. Give them clothes. Give them everything that they asked for. Give them all the trips that they wanted. So when he said something, when he went to them, okay, and said something about mommy, okay, well, mommy is acting in this way, and like versus mommy's pathetic, mommy is disgusting, mommy is, you know, negative things. They sided with him. It's like, well, mommy, what are you doing? What are you doing to make him treat you like that? Okay.
Absolutely.
Or, yeah, did you, or what did you say? Or, you know how he is. So what the children do, they try to, it's like get the mother to turn or act or behave a certain way to calm him, to appease him, okay? Sort of like to stay on his good side because of the relationship they have. They also see him in a positive light. And a lot of times, one thing I want to point out is financial. But, oh, he uses financial resources as a tool. I should say a wicked tool. Just because of, you know, how he treats them, he may be sending them to Europe. He's actually putting them in positions financially that she may not be able to do for, you know, as well or as often as he does. And the thought is put a blinder or a shutter over the children's eyes. So she have, think about it, she have the children siding with him. Okay, even, and I want to say this, even if they're 2 years old, 1 year old, straight up to 15, 16, or 20-year-olds, it doesn't matter. He will deliberately try and brainwash the children for many years to get the children to side and support him. Okay, so she could be isolated and don't have that support.
Wow.
And it's interesting, too, even in the congregation, because I've seen it in the congregation with a pastor. All right, clergy, and to me, you know, pastors and clergy, they do have, like, open hearts and want to see the best in every individual, okay? But the abuser would actually use that, I said a good nature and good side of the clergy, would use that also against her by even getting on the good side of the pastor.
Absolutely.
For instance, and for instance, it was very recent. He'll go in the back of the church and ask questions. For instance, you may have a gathering, and, oh, who made this food? Oh, it's very nice. It's very good. And then he'll sit up there and say something like, well, who pays you for that? He says, well, don't really get paid. We do it out of goodness of our heart because of the church congregation. He could go in his pocket and take out cash, a lot of cash, and give it right there. Here you go. All right.
Because they have the ability to do so, they use their influence in that way, is what you're saying.
Yes. So even the clergy and the church members, when they see him, they see him as a nice, low-key, very generous and kind person. And they don't want to run him away from the congregation. They don't want to run him out of the place. You know, the finances will probably decrease too. Do you see?
Wow.
So even wow. with that, they may come to her and say, okay, well, why don't you just forgive him? Forgive him. You know, talk to him. You know, even to a point of reconciliation and stuff. There must be something, again, re-victimizing the victim.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things I want to do inside of that is this. I want to take a quick break, and I want to come back to you. We have a caller on the line that wants to ask a question or have a comment, and we want to do that. This is very interesting here. When loving you is hurting me, you're listening to Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness. This is your host, J.R. Thickland, and we'll be right back after this break. Stay tuned.
via internet, you're probably seeing a series of advertisements. Please click on those advertisements as they help us to continue to bring you the best in soulful talk radio. Destiny by Choice 2 Fellowship on Facebook is a spiritual, drama-free, judgment-free fellowship forum for like minds to share in encouragement through testimonies, scriptures, music, prayer, worship, and fellowship. It is our desire to be an oasis of hope in the midst of the deserts and wilderness of life's most challenging experiences. We welcome you for prayer requests as well as your testimonies as we collectively operate as thermostats, changing life's experience through God's leading in His Word. Join us as we empower lives and shape destinies. That's Destiny by Choice 2 Fellowship on Facebook. Through a search, you can find us.
If you're listening via internet and you want to speak to the host, please dial 323-784-9638. And press 1 to be connected to the host. This is the Soul of America Radio.
I am Indy Harlem 2, and I am fighting the power on the Soul of America Radio.
Worldwide, coast. Coast Talk Radio. This is the Soul of America Radio. You're listening to Soar.
And now back to Hope and Healing, a journey to wholeness with your host, J.R. Thicklin.
Welcome back to Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness. This is your host, J.R. Thicklin, and we're so glad that you've joined us tonight right here on the Soul of America Radio Network. We have been in discussion tonight from the topic, When Loving You is Hurting Me, and we have our guest here, Letheria, that is sharing not only our parts of her personal testimony in life, but giving us the dynamics and principles in which many victims find themselves inside of an abusive relationship. And right before the break we have another caller who has also been a guest on the show, and she has a question or comment, and Letheria is on as well. So we bring on our caller. Good afternoon, Ms. Gardner. You're with us on Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness.
Good afternoon, Rev. Good to hear your voice. And
absolutely.
Thank you so much for letting me comment and ask a question. And I am always intrigued by the testimonies of women who have experienced domestic violence, as I have also, and survivor. I'd like to ask your guest, for one thing, I guess I might be rhetorical in a sense, but I know that when I have talked with women who came from very good households as far as economic-wise and professionally. What did you find? Letheria, is that the name? I'm sorry.
Letheria.
Am I correct? Letheria. Okay.
Letheria.
Did you find that one of the things that reason why you didn't call also it was that just the thought of the police car pulling up at your house continuously, especially when neighbors would see?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, absolutely. The police. Actually, the police was called 31 times. Not almost 31 times.
My God. Okay.
31 times in one
okay.
year. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Now, that brings me to another question then, because I know that in certain communities, and even in communities of color, as well as Caucasian communities, there's always was that the right of the law enforcement to make snap decisions on site.
Oh,
sometimes it did not work very well on behalf of people of color, they would actually leave people, the situation. It didn't always come away with an arrest, which was a problem. It also had been a problem if they were professional and known, they would want it to be kept down, you know, at a low key. And so it, until the Victims of Violence Against Women's Act came out, there was no game plan for the victims and or for the not for the victims but for the for law enforcement and judges and how to handle these cases. Did you find there was some prejudice in your that was blatant in the situations you were in? Can you give us an example?
Yes, absolutely. For example, when the police did come to our residence, because he was well known, he had a contract with the police department. He used to fix their cars. Yes, I used to help write up the contracts and do the bids, and he got them. He was very good at what he did in his enterprise. Okay. So when they came to the house, they knew him. The only thing they did was, oh, okay, all right, yeah, well, I'm not going to say his name, but the thing is, okay, well, look, this will not happen again, okay? We don't want this to happen again. You know how things are, and they a slap on the back, you know, just take care of your woman, you know, make sure this doesn't happen again. But it was not taken seriously.
Yes.
Because, like I said, he gave them breaks, he fixed their cars. They were buddy. They used to go and play golf together.
Oh my!
Yeah, they played golf together.
Yes.
So I had no standing.
Yes.
So yes, and that is blatant prejudice. Yes, it is.
Okay. Can I just one more? And I guess it's in the form of a comment, Reverend Thicklin. I was watching today a situation, and this is Mental Health Month, and I, for one, know and believe there is one of those that believe there's a connection between mental health and abuse and trauma when it comes to domestic violence, sexual abuse. And
absolutely.
And if you have a great support system, you can talk to someone, you have a great outlet for getting some things done, when it comes to reporting and counseling, and the church has always been resilient and helpful in that area. But then we have the other side, where what goes on in this house stays in this house. And so we have a lot of people who suffer from mental health issues, and they don't see it as mental health. And so I was listening today regarding this had to do with males and fatherless males. But it's still the same concept, and about the abandonment, and those things of not having any kind of support system, and the just the whole nine yards. Now, did you? I believe that, and I say this with those who have been in professional places in the media that we've read about as far as sports and all, and you know, other things. They just released Ray Rice of his responsibilities. You know, there's been a lot of things. And we know that that's one of the times is during sports. Do you actually find that, or can you say that during these times of domestic violence and when these issues are swept under the rug or even handled in court, and or a woman is paid off. I think they did that with someone else back here not too long ago, and signed him up with Dallas. Once they're paid off, the woman is paid off, and she's let to go away. She takes away baggage with her. Did you do that also? Did you find that long after the relationship, you still had some baggage that needed to be dealt with, and even in your relationship now?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Even after, that is very good points you hit up on there. Even after leaving, or the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, I have to give him glory for helping me successfully escape it through safety planning. Oh, yes, there was massive leakage exiting out and, you know, coming into, well, my identity, okay, first of all.
Yes.
Because I, you know, relearn. I had to really relearn who I was. But being with him, of course, my identity was engraved into his. Okay?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, yeah. And coming into my new identity in the one Savior Jesus Christ and with my minister husband now. Oh, yes. There were massive amount of baggage going into that. A lot. All I can say is even today, I'm not going to call any names. I'm not going to call any names. But even today, I can't even go there. But all I could say is counselor, yeah. There's a specific one, individual, where is in a very high position. And I feel this way because he was friends with my ex and stuff, and I did go to him for help. And I did, you know, did seek out his help because of his position. I was turned down, and I was refused, and I was also, let's put it this way, coerced by his position, just to keep it hush-hush. And I say coerced in other means, financially, but other means to just keep his name out of issues or upcoming issues that may, you know, come forth. Because here's the thing, if I said his name, right, and that means he was connected to other men of importance, like in City Hall, you see, and it's like all of them were in it together, and it was them. So, yeah, in that aspect, I was coerced to just.
Allow me to connect some of this to what both have said inside of this, because there's a number of things that are happening and dynamics. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that those of you that are listening, you're hearing this very, very fruitful conversation. You know, Gail, you asked some question there I think was very pertinent inside of it, but you also made some statements that I thought was good. And here's the thing about it. You spoke about mental health and the fact of how does mental health impact the issue of domestic violence. On one end, we have a side of domestic violence in the mainstream who absolutely try to negate the impact of mental health or mental illnesses and playing a part on the side of the perpetrator. Yet it's still, they will admit that domestic violence could cause mental issues with the victim. The problem with that is you can't have it both ways, because in many cases, and this is not a justification, and this is where we see a lot of time in mainstream, is that they tend to think that when you bring up mental health as it relates to the abuser, that you're making an excuse or excusing him for his behavior.
Yes.
And I want to make it plainly clear that we're not making an excuse for their behavior, but by the same token, we cannot turn our heads and ignore the fact that in many cases that same abuser grew up in an abusive home or was allowed to have those type of privileges inside of the home.
Right.
And guess what? They became a product of that. And so when they begin to act it out in a relationship, they're acting out the things that they too have been impacted. Many cases we see where abusers have grown up in an abusive home, you know, and this is their lot. This is what they know. Now we see it play out. We see it affect people and those things there. And we have to take in consideration, because if we're going to say that that mental health is not a part of it at all, then we might not ever get to being able to treat them, get them into proper services, even if the fact that they need psychotropic drugs or whatever to help deal with things. And I want to put that on the side there. On the other end, inside of this, these individuals many times have learned to really manipulate. In some cases, yes. Are they demonstrating sociopathic tendencies? Absolutely. And those things happen, but we have to keep those things in mind. Which brings me to your point when you talked about the fact that, look at this guy knew what he was doing. He had power. He had influence. He had a circle of people who esteemed him and adored him. And there are folks that, who not dare challenge that because of all the things he were in the city. You mentioned the fact of his association and affiliation. Guess what? They needed you, and in many cases, victims to keep it quiet. Don't say nothing, because to indict him is to indict all the associations that he has. So that was the point where, even in this case, if I heard you right, that even those that were in high position, even in the church, they found themselves re-victimizing you rather than going to this individual and saying, listen, is there a problem? You know, what's going on? How can we help? And so inside of saying that, I bring this point up that I think is crucial. I think it's crucial for all of us to understand this. There is no profile of a perpetrator. They could be the CEO of companies. They could be the one who's behind the pulpit. They can be the one who's signing your check. They could be anyone. We're not talking about necessarily a classification of a person, but we are talking about the behavior of a person, and that behavior that knows how to manipulate. In his case, he knew how to manipulate. Okay, sure, you're not going to charge us anything for this. No, just my gift to the church. Boy, that is influence. That is persuasion. That is building power behind yourself. That is changing people's perception and perspective of you. This is manipulation. We know how to do that. We know that most abusers are that way. They know how to manipulate. They know how to control. And so here's the problem. If, as a movement, we have those that don't believe that mental health could be a part of the problem with abusers, then that means that we're not willing to look far enough or deep enough to understand its impact and how far-reaching it is. Because in the same token, when we look at the fact, and here's a study that was done about 4 years ago, and I thought it was interesting. I think it was Columbia that did the study that talked about the fact that, watch this, why was it that educated women, per capita, educated women were more suffered abuse more than their uneducated counterparts? How do you explain that? Because everything in our makeup tells us, well, you know, if you get a good education, if you're that businesswoman, if you're that career woman, if you're that power woman, and everything like that, you would probably not suffer domestic violence. And yet, and still, the study that was done says the opposite.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Because once again, the academic education does not necessarily make one immune to the paralysis of relationships. And those relationships oftentimes are deceptive from the abuser part. They're deceptive. They're charming. I mean, no one walks into an abusive relationship when the guy introduces himself by slapping, choking you, strangling you, and say, hey, baby, I want you to be my lady. No, not at all. So we know that these relationships oftentimes start off with very charming behavior, very calculated behavior, very much the luring behavior, all things that captivate you, but it's all part of the power and control.
Exactly.
And so, putting all this in perspective, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes people don't see it until it's much too late. Sometimes people are drawn in by their current situation. Sometimes people are drawn in because I've never had anyone to pay this much attention to me, not understanding that that attention soon becomes control. It becomes dictatorship. It becomes power. It becomes demeaning. It becomes all of those things that puts you in a box. And I think those things are very critical to be able to discuss in this time. You listen to Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness. This is J.R. Ficklin. I'm so very glad that you've joined us on tonight. A special guest tonight is on with us, Letheria, and she is sharing along the topic, When Loving You is Hurting Me. And we're so glad to have her on, as well as we have Gail Gardner have joined on in this conversation. If you're listening right now, desire to have a question or a comment, just dial area code 323-784-9. If you're already in the queue, simply hit number 1 on your keypad. That lets our producer know that you want to come on the air, and we'll get you. And we want to take your call right after this commercial break. You listen to Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness. J.R. Ficklin will be right back after this commercial message.
You're listening to the Soul of America Radio.
You're listening to Hope and Healing, a journey to wholeness with your host, J.R. Thicklin. And remember, you can catch this show every Monday night, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern and 8 o'clock p.m. Central. And give them a call tonight at 323-784-9638. 323-784-9638. You give Jay a call right now. And now, back to the show.
A journey to wholeness. This is your host, J.R. Thicklin, and I'm so very glad that you join us tonight right here on the Soul of America Radio Network. That's right, each and every Monday night, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, 8 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Central, 7 o'clock Pacific, and 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock Mountain, 6 o'clock Pacific, and wherever you are around the globe, you can find us here on this great Soul of America Radio Network. And for those of you that are joining us for the first time, we welcome you as part of this, as this is a very productive movement as we address the issues of domestic violence. We've had as a topic tonight, When Loving You is Hurting Me, and we are so glad to have had with us today our guest is Sotheria, and she has shared a lot of insight to the dynamics of what happens when that is the case, when a victim oftentimes is immobilized by her fear of hurting, a fear of protecting, having to protect the reputation of the individual, and oftentimes fear of not being believed because of the fact of that reputation of the individual. And so we're very glad to have her on. We've also had Gail have joined us on with question or comment, and I want you to know that you also can be a guest with your question and or comment by simply dialing in at 323-784-9638. And if you're already dialed in or once you dial in, simply hit the number 1 on your keypad. That lets our producer know that you want to get on the air. You don't have to give your name, but we'll be glad to have you tonight. And we want to hear with about 17 minutes left in the show, about actually 15 minutes. I want to go back to Lotharia inside of this. I know that she was sharing inside of these dynamics and what they represented, oftentimes being re-victimized by people who are in position, because oftentimes people just don't want to believe that a person can be this way. And so I want to bring Lotharia back on. Lotharia, you're back on the air. Gail, you're there as well. Everything, continue.
Okay, yes, I am. I would like to address some of the comments that you made in regards to mental health of the abuser, okay, and the victim, okay, that's very crucial, okay. I must say, with my abuser, he lost his mother at the age of 8. She died, mm-hmm. Okay, and he secretly blames her for leaving him, okay.
Wow.
In many years, he said if she was in my life, his life would have been differently, okay? As a result, his dad was more harsher, with women and others. And it seemed like he just blames. He had this inner vow or inner blame thing he carried around. And I think that played a major part of why he mistreated women, including himself.
Ms. Derry, I don't agree, because domestic violence is a choice, and we have a lot of people who have lost loved ones.
Yes, I totally agree. And it's a choice and learned behavior. Like what I said earlier, yes, he learned how to treat women from his father. Okay. Things were like intergenerational, grandfather, father, then himself. Okay. But all that, his mother, all that plays a part in his mental health. Using, and I do know it's a choice, you're right. Okay. And as far as I want to address substance abuse treatment by the victim, I just wanted to point out, too, that staying in an abusive relationship or marriage can lead to several places, and one place is the grave. Substance abuse treatment centers, like you mentioned, prison, mental institutions, hospitals, or shelter, homelessness. And you got the substance abuse treatment centers, and what I found out is that the victim may turn to drugs, alcohol, or any type of drug of choice to help numb the pain, okay, of dealing with it and going through it. All right? Pills, they may turn to, they may have suicidal thoughts, okay, or attempt suicide, all right? Or go into chronic depression. I mean, like, cannot function 2 or 3 weeks, cannot get out of bed, cannot tend to the kids due to the treatment that, you know, the abuser is imposing on her. So I just want to point out those places or conditions.
You know, inside of both comments, you know, we often talk about, you know, the choice, and we know that domestic violence is a choice. And one of the things I think it's such a thin line between inside of that definition is this. We can use the word coping skills. We can use the word alternatives. We can use the word, you know, how do people, you know, there are people that get angry and they may yell.
Mm-hmm.
There are people that get angry and they may get in their car and just drive away. There are people that get angry and they may punch walls or whatever. And whether we say they're substituting the walls and all that for a victim, everything is a behavior. You know, every behavior, I mean, everything that they do, it's a choice that they're making. This is the way that they're coping. The fact that those choices oftentimes are impacting the lives of others is controlling them. It is frightening them, it's intimidating them, and therefore it becomes a tool. It becomes a tool of oppression, if you would. It becomes a tool of intimidation. I think one of the things that we have to keep so clearly in mind inside of all of those things that which we talk is the fact of this, is that there is a cause and there is an effect. One of the things that is very highly being researched now is the fact that what happens to children that are traumatized and go untreated? What happens to children that are traumatized and oftentimes internalize things that they have been exposed to, oftentimes never treated? And we see those things being played out oftentimes in their behavior. And some things are triggered when they're involved in certain relationships, certain situations. It is one of the things that happen today when we see, oftentimes, when there even have been homicides or familicide, or children have witnessed parents being murdered in front of them, or those things there. And we have to ask ourselves a question, you know, especially culturally, with the stigma that we have in our community about mental health and mental illnesses, are we not doing ourselves a disservice? On one end, we have us as pastors and religious leaders. There are many of us that will say, you know, they just need prayer, or they may just need deliverance. And I agree with all that. But deliverance may not just come from pouring of oil and laying of hands. Perhaps deliverance is something that, for some, is a process. It's a process of intervention, a process of counseling, a process of a lot of these things to help them deal with what they're dealing with. And I think what happens inside of this whole subject matter is that we have to be so careful that we don't have a one-size-fit-all mentality, or we don't automatically rule out what might be good for one may also or may not be good for the other. And I think that is so important inside of the critical nature of this subject matter, because if we don't do so, guess what? I say it all the time. Many of our abusers grew up in our homes. They grew up at home. It's a learned behavior. It is the parent university when children are exposed. And so I go back to this point here. In many cases, and in my years, I worked in shelter services in my early years. And one of the things I understood is that in many cases, I've seen victims who never made the decision to come to the shelter until they saw the impact of the abuse that they lived in was having on their children, or the abuser started then also abusing their children. And as a result of it, it became that catalyst for that victim to exit and to find a way out. And I believe that we have to understand that safety is one thing, meaning that we're removed from the endangerment of that situation living with or coexisting with that abuser. But I don't believe that safety is all of it. I think after the safety, we have to be very cautious of the fact of what do we do to help preserve their lives? What do we do to help them reconcile? What do we do? Because oftentimes, even in schools, that's why there must be a greater education with school systems, greater education with counselors, greater education for teachers. Because, listen, you don't understand what a child have gone through. You know, you're expecting a child to come to school, take a state standardized test, and do well, and this kid here has been dealing the last 2 days not even getting sleep because of the ruckus that is going on in the house, the abuse going on, the fussing, the threatening. Many cases, children sleeping in closets because they're afraid of what's going to happen at home, and then they come to school. And when they come to school, we expect them to function. So teachers not having information, not understanding what have happened, not being equipped to ask the right questions, they do what they know to do. Because now the child seems to be a problem in the class. Lift your head up. Why are you sleeping in my class? Get out. I'm sending you straight to the office. I'm sending you straight to ISS. And so it becomes a punishment. Well, for the kid who's gone through that for the last night or two, inside of that, they've already been punished. They've been punished because they've been up all night. They've been punished because of the fear that they've endured. Now they come to school and we expect them to be alert, learn, and perform. And what we're getting is not that. We're getting them saying, listen, this is what is happening. You're seeing them suffer. You're seeing you're actually seeing what's happening with them. You're seeing the symptoms now being played out because now we're sending that kid out of the classroom. Get them out of the classroom, oftentimes because they're not participating or those things, and no one ever asks a question, what's wrong?
Yeah.
No one asks the question, what's wrong? We conclude immediately, get out of my classroom. You're disrupting my class. Listen, if you're not going to participate, get out of here. You don't need to be. And that's what happened from teachers who have not been educated to understand this is a dynamic situation. Is school even a safe place for children to admit that I have a problem at home? Is even school a safe place for a child to be able to say, listen, I need to talk to the counselor and everything because I didn't sleep last night. This is what happened at my house. Is school even that place? And if school is not that place, think about the children who go on week after week, year after year, month after month, without having any intervention whatsoever. Somewhere along the line, they're going to explode or they're going to implode. And when they explode, you know what happens? They generally end up exploding and finding themselves in the criminal justice system. And so guess what? They got no help when they were the victims, but they get prosecuted and get locked up and get all these things when they now begin to act out of what they've been exposed to. That is why, though I know that it is a behavior, the choice is a behavior, the behavior that they exhibit is a choice. When we talk about abusers, we have to understand what are those things that oftentimes have put them there. The child who was never ever able, given permission to express themselves, talk about I'm hurting. I go back to this as an anger management specialist, and I deal with men a lot. And these men end up in our jails, our prison. They end up in system. And guess what? We have nurtured them to never, ever express anger, to express that I'm afraid, that I'm sad. Because most time, guess what? It's all right for a young boy. It's all right for him to show anger. It's all right for him to show those things. But we never give him permission to say, I'm sad. That hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
That really injured me. What do we say? Even well-intentioned men and women say, boy, drive those tears. Stop acting like a little girl. What's wrong with you? Stop acting like a little girl. He runs and he falls and scrapes his knee. He starts crying. We say, stop acting like a little girl. His sister runs and scrapes her knee. And we say, come here, let me kiss it. Oh, mama baby, daddy's baby. Come here. But we didn't give him the same permission. Guess what? Only he has only emotion that he's generally given to express is the anger. So now we got a prison full of men, jailhouses full of men who run around talking about, hey, ain't gonna be soft. The reality is that you've already been breeded to be soft. You've been raised to be soft because really being soft is having is not having the ability to express yourself in a healthy manner. That is what soft is. Hard is really my ability that even up under the most extreme pressure, I can express myself in a way that communicates my emotion, my pain, my hurt, and understand that it's all right to do so.
Oh.
It is something that I think that we have to really relook, that we have to take a second look at inside of the field, inside of all of these things. Because I think what has happened is that when we put domestic violence in a box, it starts oozing out all over the place because, guess what, it may not look the same from one case to another. Sometimes it looks different. It looks different. The number of cases I've dealt with, I'm quite sure, Gail, you've seen these exact same things in your cases. The number of cases I've dealt with cases where victims say, I'm not a victim. Not at all. No, he hit me. I knocked the fire right out of it. Oh, no, I'm not a victim. Oh, he know he raised his hand against me. He know it's on. Well, guess what's happening? That individual don't think they're a victim because of the fact they retaliate, and this is the way their normality is, and so they don't see the victimization part of it. But they never think about what if others are exposed to this? What if this is what children see? What if it, once again, we go back to understanding, and that's what that whole thing about you know, what does the victim look like? What does the perpetrator look like? Man, it can be very subjective. Because to the victim who doesn't know that they're a victim, it could be very dangerous. And to the perpetrator who doesn't understand that their actions is that which is abusive, it can also be very devastating. Because now you're living a life that you actually think this is normal. You really think it's normal to talk to women that way. You really think it's normal to put your hands on people. You really think it's normal to threat. You really think it's normal. And without proper intervention and seeing some behavior modification, we begin to see a world that is abnormal, who's crying out thinking that they are normal. You listen to Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness. This is your host, J.R. Thicklin. We're right at the end of the show, and I want to give you an opportunity with your last comments there. Wow, we got on a little late, and I really wish we could, I really wish we could recuperate that particular time together because I think it's very important to do so. And I'm not sure, did we lose Gail? Okay, we might have lost Gail, and she's somewhere. So, Gail, if you're talking, Gail, we only have about 3 or 4 minutes, but I don't know if you've been trying to talk, but your mic wasn't on, so I didn't hear you, but you're on the air now with us, and in our last 2 minutes, I don't know if you had a question or comment or reply, but in our last 2 minutes, I'd like to get you and Letheria's last your final comments.
Well, I just wanted to say I appreciate the guest tonight and her bravery and what she has done, become no longer what I like to say, no longer a survivor but a thriver. Also, hopefully we can even stretch this out further. I was in a conversation regarding on Saturday at a women's conference regarding forgiveness and how that plays into the trauma that is experienced regarding domestic violence and sexual abuse and how people will wind up being re-victimized by your own kind because of what we believe forgiveness, how we should handle forgiveness in those areas. So I do appreciate all that has been said this evening and is as lively as ever and would love to hear our speaker again.
Well, one of the things I will say, and I really appreciate it, Gail, it's the fact that, you know, that's a very powerful subject on forgiveness. About a month ago, actually in April, one of our other guests that was on just shortly, a real good colleague of mine here, Sabrina Harris, actually had a program here in the greater South Florida area, and it was actually, it dealt with the whole part of forgiveness, the power of forgiveness. And one of the things one of the things that was so very important there was the fact that they dealt with this issue of forgiveness, understanding that forgiveness is a process. It was a process. It wasn't something that happened so instantly.
That's right.
That forgiveness was a process, and that one of the things that we I've just got word from our president and CEO of the Soul America Radio Network that we've been given about a 20-minute extension on the program. So that's great.
Wonderful.
This has been a
wonderful,
very, very informative show. But one of the things that those audiences that are listening by internet, I'm going to be very sorry that we will lose you, but what you can do is dial in at area code 323-784-9638. You'll be able to continue on with us inside of so that's one of the things that you can do, area code 323-784-9638, and you can remain with us even after the internet is off. So we invite you on tonight, and those of you that are still listening on, I believe that you can still hit 1 on the keypad if you'd like to interject with a question and or comment. And so as I was saying, we had a very tremendous show there that dealt with forgiveness. And so what I want to say to you is this, is the fact that I would love perhaps in the next week or two being able to bring that show on the air and have some other guests on that was a part of that platform along with yourself, and we can really begin to unpack this whole thing about forgiveness.
Yeah.
One of the things I want to say what we do know is this, two things, anger and unforgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Anger and unforgiveness is something that not only impacts you emotionally, but it can cause physical harm and health issues, and all of those things happen. A lot of time the doctor will diagnose and say, listen, you know, you're going in because you're saying, I'm feeling this, I'm feeling that, and they can't find it. And a lot of times people say, well, you know, that, you know, it's not really true. But the doctors say oftentimes it's physiological. It's happening in that way. And some people say, well, it's psychosomatics. Well, whatever you want to call it, when we deal with unforgiveness and unforgiveness begin to swell up inside of us, and when I say unforgiveness, to the place it calls anger, and it's kind of almost like you were talking about earlier, Theria, with your ex-abuser, how he lived his life really blaming his mother who had left, who had passed at 8 years old. That is a lifelong of unforgiveness. That's a lifelong of unforgiveness and anger. And so inside of that, his action, he struck out. He began to strike out at who? Women. He struck out at women. So he did what? He attacked women. He struck out at women. Because perhaps the fact of you're with me, but for how long? Will you leave me too?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So do I control you? You know, do I do those things to control you? You know, even in some time in relationship that we think that are healthy, how many times people do things and they treat people the way they do the things that they do, hoping that that will keep a person acting a certain way, or keep a person in bay. And so we think that, well, if I do this for you and I treat you like this, then you automatically supposed to do this, and it's not automatic. And so those things are very important. And of those things, so want to make sure that we got that in. 323-784-9638. That is how you reach us here on the Soul of America Radio Network. I'm going to take one more break. It'll be our final break of this evening. But if you have a question and a comment, simply hit number 1 on your keypad. We'll love to get your question or comment. You listen to Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness. Tonight's subject, When Loving You is Hurting Me. This is J.R. Thicklin. I'll be right back after this commercial break.
A Journey to Wholeness with J.R. Thicklin is coming back right after this. You're listening to the Soul of America Radio, LLC.
This is the one and only Soar.
One in four women will experience domestic violence in her lifetime. Every year, nearly 3 million children witness domestic violence right in their homes. Domestic violence is most likely to occur between the hours of 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. More than 60% of domestic abuse incidents happen right at home. Survivors of domestic violence face high rates of depression, sleep disturbance, anxiety, flashbacks, and other emotional distress. If you or someone that you know is a victim of domestic violence, or if you think someone is, reach out to them. If you are a victim, reach out to somebody. You can call the National Hotline right now at 1-800-799-7233. That's 1-800-799-7233. If you didn't have a chance to write that number down, call Jay Thicklin right now at 1-323-784-9638.
One and only, Soar.
Speak to Jay right now at 323-784-9638. And now, Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness, continues with your host, J.R. Thicklin.
Welcome back to Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness. This is your host, J.R. Thicklin, and I'm so very glad that you've joined us here tonight on the Soul of America Radio Network. And as I say, each and every Monday night, this is where you join us. Just a little bonus coverage here, another about 5 to 10 minutes. We'll be ending the show, but we're very thankful for our caller tonight and our guests tonight, both Letheria as well as Gail, being in with us tonight. And definitely, we open it up to you, any last-minute questions and our comments, and we're going to begin to wrap this up tonight, going to wrap this part up, and hopefully that you know, and that you have been definitely enlightened in some areas to understand these dynamics, that it's not as easy as it may sound or look like to others. And because it's not as easy as it may look like or sound to others, people must understand that domestic violence is not simple. It is very complex. It brings about a lot of different dynamics, affect people on every level. And those are the things that we have to keep in mind inside of that. So with that being said, I'm going to allow for the last couple of words from you tonight, and we'll move forward.
Okay. All right. I'd like to say something before we go really quickly.
Okay.
Responding on forgiveness. The call said is very important. I just want to say I couldn't forgive him at first. It was very difficult. I couldn't forgive him all on my own. I tried, and I couldn't, and I found out that I needed the help of the Holy Spirit to do that. In my Lord and Savior Jesus, me do that. And at first, I want to say it's not a feeling. It's not a feeling. It's a decision. You have to decide first to forgive. And then just like in the prayer, in Matthew, the scripture says in Matthew, right in the Abba Father prayer, he says, forgive
forgive. Jesus says forgive those our debts and trespasses. So we ourselves, you know, if we forgive our debts and trespasses, then he will forgive, the Heavenly Father will forgive us our debts and trespasses. And that there prompted me to forgive him. Lord, I want to forgive me of mine. So I know I must forgive him. So, like I said, it was a decision, and he did help me. He did help me to forgive him, finally, because forgiveness is not for, you know, it's for you. It helps
Absolutely.
Us assess and bring us healing and a journey to hope and healing.
Absolutely.
And I just
want to Absolutely.
Say, yes. Oh, I want to thank you for this opportunity and the caller. Oh, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to share my story and to go forth. I just want to just thank the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ for this platform.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so very much for sharing. I think it's so very important. Inside of everything that you've said, you know, once again, you know, one of the things that is so important is this. It's the fact that it's not easy always to even forgive. It takes a great strength. And for many of us, we understand it takes a spiritual strength to get that to that place. One of the things I think that happens is this, is that so many times I think we focus on the act, you know, and we don't consider the actor inside of it. And not that we look for excuses for the actor. I think we must understand that in many ways, you know, God, you know, what has happened in this person's life, you know, that caused them to be this way. You know, to be able to come to a place of not only praying for them, but understand that when we do ask for forgiveness and when forgiveness do come, you know, inside of it, forgiveness doesn't mean they become your new best buddy. Forgiveness doesn't mean that all of a sudden, hey, let's meet over at, you know, let's meet over there at, you know, at Rain Dancer's restaurant, or let's meet at the Cheesecake Factory for lunch or dinner. That's not what forgiveness means at all. But forgiveness is releasing that individual. Releasing them
yes.
and releasing them, because to think that my unforgiveness of them is somehow or another going to punish them, then I'm really fooling myself. I have a niece who says it very simple. She said, you know what unforgiveness is? She said it's like drinking deadly poison and waiting for the other person to die. And so it's so important that we
mm-hmm.
forgive one another.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
we have a show tonight, and I'm very happy about what has been delivered tonight. And remember, you can always go back to www.soulofamericaradio.com, and you can always go there and listen to the podcast of any of our broadcasts. You can always go back and listen to it. You can share it with someone if you like. Those of you those of you that are listening tonight, you can always go and also download our app. Go to your app store. Go to our App Store. Our App Store, you can go to it if you're on Google. I have a Samsung phone. Go to Google App Store and put in Soul of America Radio, and you will be able to bring up our app, download it to your device, and it downloads quite easily. And you'll see there where it says shows, and you can go back and listen to any show that's been on this network, including the Tony
mm-hmm.
Stallings Show and other shows that are here. There are a lot of classic shows that have been there on, so you can do that. You can always use it to share with someone. Perhaps you know someone who's actually going through, and you quite haven't known how to approach them and talk to them about it, but perhaps you could say, listen, I want you to listen to this show that I was listening to, because I learned something or some things that was very powerful there, and I thought of you, and give them an opportunity to do so. So I think that makes a big difference inside of the work that we all look to do. So, you know, I want to make sure that you do that. Once again, www.soulofamericaradio.com. You can go there in the Hope and Healing tab, go to archive shows and be able to pull those things up. I want you to also visit us on our Facebook pages. There is a page to balance is your business. It's one of our, as well as our desk. And whichever way you decide to contact us, know that we're there. We're looking forward to you and looking forward to continue to make a difference. If you're knowing someone who's in a domestic violence situation right now, you heard it earlier, but the national hotline number, 1-800-799-7233, 1-800-799-SAFE. And I say to you, as we prepare to get out of here today, that listen, that there is no excuse for abuse. Understand this. that abuse is not problem of a victim. Abuse is a problem of the perpetrator. So until next time, this is J.R. Thicklin, and on behalf of all of us here at Solo America Radio Network and Destiny by Choice, I want to say, have a great day, remain safe, and understand that you can turn your pain into power. Be blessed. Have a great day on today. Thank you very much.